of Maharaj Cricket and how in his kingdom, which included the entirety of the world, for he had conquered the world, in that kingdom Kali had begun to enter. Kali means quarrel. This is the one of the prime symptoms of Kali, and it's natural because Kali's business is to undermine all authority, and ultimately the authority that Kali undermines is the authority of Krishna, the Lord, because we are all Krishna's servants. Krishna Nitya Das Jiva Sarupahoy Krishna Nitya Das. This is our constitution, our actual nature. But no one likes to be the servant of Krishna. No one in the material world likes to be the servant of Krishna, because rather in the material world we would rather be the master, the controller, the enjoyer. This is the consciousness that is evoked upon the living entity as soon as he turns his back on Krishna. Bhule se jeev. As soon as he turns his back on Krishna, bahiyamukh, then he immediately gets a false ego, because his real ego, his real identity is that I am the servant of Krishna. But we turn our back on that. Turn our back on our authority. And then we acquire a false ego, a false identity, in which we, although it is manifest according to our body and our individuality and our mentality, but the common factor in all false egos is that it is me-centered instead of Krishna-centered. So the business of Kali is to entwine and entangle the living entity further in false ego, further, deeper in the darker modes of ignorance, by undermining Krishna's authority, undermining every bit of authority that exists in the material world will be undermined by Kali. And the result of that, of all the undermining of authority, is simply quarrel. Because when the false ego increases, when I am the center, then I want to do what I want when I want to do it immediately. I want my enjoyment now. I want to do everything that I want now. So if there are two people thinking like that in a room, there's going to be a quarrel. What to speak if there's 50 people or 100 people or 1,000 people? Everyone becomes their own authority. And the result is quarrel, distress, increase of anxiety. Why do you do that? Because I felt like it. This is the ultimate authority in Kali Yuga, because I wanted to do it. And do you know who I am? I'm completely insignificant, but I'm thinking I'm all important. I am the God in my little insignificant universe, where everything in illusion is just simply rotating around me and my desires and what I want and what I feel and what I think. This is illusion. This is Kali Yuga. To further illusion, to break authority. So, when Maharaj Prickett, he saw that Kali was entering his kingdom, he was very upset, because he was governing on the order of Krishna. He was a mighty hero. And we don't know what rulers are in Kali Yuga. We think that rulers are just incapable thieves. This is what it means to be a ruler. They're not even expert at thieving properly and getting away with it. They're always getting caught. But if you go to India, you see, you won't see it amongst today's rulers, but you'll see, you see, if you go to Jaipur, and you can see the garb the clothes of one of the rulers of I can't remember how long ago, a few hundred years ago. It was Maharaj something Singh. Singh means lion. Is it Jai Singh? And it's, I'm not sure, the clothes are Jai Singh's that they have there?
He's the founder of Jai.
Yeah, but I think he might have taken his clothes with him when he. But there's one king, I think it was after Jai Singh, but it may have been Jai Singh. He was 7'3" tall or something like that. You could see his you've seen this? It's huge. Is this Jai Singh's?
No.
No. It's huge. And he's like this wide. He's a man who commands respect. And he used to describe what he would eat for breakfast. You know, it was huge amounts. And he was so powerful. He would get up in the first thing in the morning. He would go out and he would do his exercise and he would fight this and ride here. He was a hero. So, the Kshatriyas, they had such heroic energy, Ishwara Bhava it is called. They possessed this Ashakti of Krishna, actually. That's actually what it is. They were embodying a power of Krishna's, of God's, for ruling. So Maharaj Prickett was, as a pure devotee, He was empowering, embodying that so deeply. So when he saw that Kali was working, and we'll hear, we heard in the last chapter about the conversation between the bull, which was the personification of religion, and the cow, which was the earth, how everyone was suffering due to Kali, already suffering due to Kali's influence. He went out, he charged out to find Kali. He conquered the kingdom, made sure that everyone was being governed, all the governing was proper in the kingdom, and he found Kali doing his work. So we're going to hear in chapter 17 the punishment and the reward of Kali, how Maharaj Prickett, a real king, a real leader, a real ruler, how he dealt with Kali. So the first thing was that he arrived and he saw the pitiful condition of Bhumi Devi, the cow, who was the earth actually, and the pitiful, unhappy, lamentable condition of the bull, who symbolizes, who was the personification of religiosity, and they were in a terrible condition because Kali was beating their legs, and harming them, causing these innocent creatures, these godly creatures, to suffer. So, in this chapter, we'll see the first three verses. Really show the primal symptoms of Kali and how Kali works. How Kali works its way in to create the inauspicious atmosphere and the fighting atmosphere, etc. So after reaching that place, Maharaj Prickett observed, what did he see? A lower caste sudra, a low class person who had no integrity, who had no who was not dedicated to following the principles of religion, of rulership, but a low-class person, a sudra, but he was dressed like a king, as if he was a king. And Srila Sridhar Swami has commented that he was dressed in garments of embroidered gold, as if he was a king. But these English saying, the saying in English that clothes make the man does not apply. Because if one is wearing the cloth, the clothes of a king, it does not give him the heart of a lion. Because a king has to have that kind of heart, that he's willing to risk his life. He's trained in chivalry, and the use of weapons, and if he sees one of his subjects in any difficulty, he'll risk his life to save that person immediately with no selfishness. Is that type of a mood? Prabhupada said one time, he was giving an example of what a country would be like if it was Krishna conscious. He was saying that if the president of the United States, this example was for the United States, was Krishna conscious, there was something going on where some little country had taken over a ship of the United States, and there was something. And so Prabhupada said, if the government was Krishna conscious, they would say, if you harm one hair on the head of one of our citizens, there will be war. So the idea is that the king's business is to protect the citizens. This is one of the prime functions of the king, that he protects the citizens from thieves, from robbers, from anyone. The heart of a lion, noble, ferocious when required. So wearing the dress of a king did not make Kali into a king. Rather, he was acting against religious principles. He was beating a cow and a bull with a club as if they had no owner. So here is the first symptom of Kali and how Kali works. First thing is people who are not qualified with integrity, with character, with training, with a noble consciousness, they become the rulers. People who are unqualified, who have sudra-like qualities, they end up ruling the country. And the second verse describes what happens next. The bull was as white, because Kali was beating the bull and the cow, was as white as a white lotus flower. He was terrified of the Sudra who was beating him. And he was so afraid that he was standing on one leg, trembling and urinating. So the second symptom is what immediately, so after the improper rulers come to power, who don't know what the goal of life is, who have no integrity or nobility, who don't know how to rule. Next thing that happens is religiosity gets beaten. The principles of religion get maneuvered around, abolished, the state becomes secular. So many pseudo-religions spring up with no reference to scriptures. Again, if you want to understand how Kali works, understand this principle that authority is ruined. So the authority of scriptures goes, the authority of religious leadership goes, they're corrupted, and people don't have faith in them anymore, the state becomes secular, and the citizens become indifferent to religion. They can't see the relevance of religion. And that is very handy for them. Why? It's because then they can do whatever they like. And that is what the result of Kali is. Every man becomes their own authority. And in the third verse, the third symptom of religion, of irreligion, of Kali. Although the cow is beneficial because one can draw religious principles from her, she was now rendered poor and calfless. And in Kali Yuga, when a cow doesn't have a calf, we know why. Because they're taken away for the slaughter. Her legs were being beaten by a sudra. There were tears in her eyes, and she was distressed and weak. She was hankering after some grass in the field. Nowadays, the cow, there's no sense of cow protection. There's only cow killing. And they just see the cow as a factory for either meat or milk. And then after milk, then meat. So they feed the cow chemicals. They pump the cow full of antibiotics and medicines. So even the meat and the milk, and they give artificial hormones to the cows. So even the milk turns into poison, what to speak of the flesh. The people are ingesting this, thinking enjoyment. But actually, they're just getting the sinful reaction. The beginnings of the sinful reactions, the diseases that they get, are just the beginnings of the sinful reactions. What to speak of the impiety, the misery that people bring upon their own heads by engaging in this completely contrary to religious principle of killing the cows. When one sees a cow, they are so innocent, motherly, homely. They're helpless, practically speaking. And then to kill helpless creatures, how hard one's heart has to be. How cruel and inhuman one has to be. How merciless one has to be. And then one wonders why there is no mercy being spread around in the society. So these three things. First, bad rulers, because a good ruler would never tolerate a religiosity. Second, as soon as there's a bad ruler, irreligious principles come into being. The law of religion is finished. And then third, cow protection finished. Cow slaughter being the first business. So when the real king comes across this, he had the authority. Just hear his mood. His voice sounded deep like thunder. So he confronted his colleague. He said, "Oh, who are you? You appear to be strong, and yet you dare kill within my protection those who are helpless. By your dress you pose yourself to be a godly man, a king, but by your deeds you are opposing the principles of the twice-born Kshatriyas. It is the activities of a ruler that make him a ruler, a Kshatriya. You rogue, do you dare beat an innocent cow because Lord Krishna and Arjuna, the carrier of the Gandiva bow, are out of sight? Since you are beating the innocent in a secluded place, you are considered a culprit and therefore deserve to be killed." You deserve to be killed. Not, oh, you must have had a bad childhood, and you should go to therapy now for some time to work out your inner aggressions and your hurt, wounded inner child. No, you are doing something horrible to an innocent creature under my protection. You dare doing this in my kingdom. You'll be killed for this. It was heavy. Then immediately after stopping this person of Kali, personified irreligiosity, then he immediately, Maharaj Prickett, turned his attention to the cow and the bull and began to console them. He felt horrible that this was going on. These innocent creatures within his kingdom were put into difficult situations. It was like He was their father like that. They had taken his birth in his kingdom and he felt fatherly affection to them. And when the child, the son or the daughter of the parent, when they see their son or their daughter in some pain, they feel the misery themselves. So he had that type of mood. So he said, now, for the first time in a kingdom well protected by the arms of the kings of the Kuru dynasty, because Kali had begun, I see you grieving with tears in your eyes. Up till now, no one on earth has ever shed tears because of royal negligence. O son of Surabhi, you need not lament any longer now. There is no need to fear this low-class sudra. And, O mother cow, as long as I am living as the ruler and subduer of all envious men, there is no cause for you to cry. Everything will be good for you. I will change the situation. So, Maharaj Prickett, he was a ruler. The right birth, the right training, the right devotion to Krishna and religious principles. So he began to speak further to the cow. He kept saying, Who has done this to you? Because it's the prime duty of the king to subdue the suffering of those who suffer in his kingdom. So he was thinking, whoever has done this to you, I will kill them. No citizens in my kingdom will suffer. And the mood was that I am a member of the Kuru dynasty. I am the a devotee of Krishna. I'm the grandson of Arjuna. And by allowing this to go on in my kingdom is being blackmailed. I will remove this spot from my kingdom now. Again, this is the mood that a king governs with, because his chief duty is to protect the law-abiding citizens, not to exploit them, not to keep them in darkness, to protect them from any anxiety. Why? So that they can live peacefully, they have material desires, so that they can get their material needs satisfied, so that they can make advancement in spiritual life. And in this way, he was representing Krishna like a father. So, Sridhar Swami comments in this that Maharaj Prickett wanted to kill the culprit for his own benefit, because if one commits sins in this life and continues to commit sins, only by getting punished can those sins be removed. Of course, there are spiritual ways to remove them. But aside from that, the punishment is good for the criminal. And he also comments that Maharaj Prickett was saying, such a person's arms should be cut at the root. So he was telling this to the cow and the bull. Such a person's arms should be cut at the root. And don't think that I don't have the power to punish Kali. So he was reassuring them that they were now going to be protected and their misery would end. So, who has done this? I will stop them. Who has done this? So when asking the bull this question and assuring him, because sometimes if you're an innocent creature and there's a big person beating you, and someone stops him and says, who has done this to you? You want to make sure, first of all, that the The person who is asking you the question is going to be strong enough to protect you, because as soon as you said he's done it, he's going to become more angry. So he was assured. The bull felt assured by Maharaj Prickett that he was safe. But he answered in a very interesting way. He said, I cannot say who has done this. Kali was standing there beating him with a stick, causing him unlimited pain, and he was assured of his protection, of his own protection. He was not afraid, but yet he answered in a very philosophical way. I cannot ascertain who is the one who is actually doing this to me. Why? Because he was very philosophical, and he said, because there are so many philosophies that explain the very workings of the material world that have become bewildered. Who is doing this? So in text, we'll read text 19 and 20 and hear more of the answer. Some of the philosophers who deny, this is what the bull is saying, all sorts of duality. They say everything is one. They declare that one's own self is responsible for his personal happiness and distress. So, there are many ways to understand this. And actually, in these two verses, it describes in Vedic thought there are Saddarshan, there are six philosophical systems. And each one of them is basically pulls the living entity away from his relationship with Krishna. So in Kali Yuga, there are so many philosophies that go around. People speak so many philosophical truths. And the result of that is that, factually speaking, the bottom line result is that people become bewildered as to what's going on. So here, if someone denies all duality and says that everything is one, and that ultimately I am the supreme, that we are all God, then who is beating me? I'm just beating myself, basically. So who can I complain to? Who can I complain about? So is that the fact that it's only me who is doing this? Am I personally responsible for my own happiness and distress? So that is one philosophy, that I am the doer. That will come out in a, interestingly enough, as soon as you deny all duality, when you think everything is one, it will come very similar to the philosophy spoken later of a complete materialist and atheist who thinks that it is up to me, I am everything. I once saw a self-help book in some store many years ago, and it was written in a very mysterious way, and they told so many stories, and they said, if you can accept these three words, it said this in the beginning, if you accept these three words as true, your whole life will change and you'll get everything that you desire. So in the first chapter, it didn't reveal it what those three words were. But it led you further and talked around it. In the second chapter, it told stories about people who accepted these words and their great success, but it didn't tell you what those words were. And in the third chapter, it got closer to the philosophy, and in the fourth chapter, still closer. And then in the sixth and final chapter, it said, now we will tell you those three words. Listen carefully. You are God! How disappointing. All the build-up. It means that if you can just accept that you are God,
That means that all you have to do is desire something. All you have to do is want something and it will happen. So people, this is Kali Yuga. So many people are bewildered by this philosophy. I trust myself. I believe in myself. We are all that. Others say that superhuman powers are responsible. That all this is going on by the power of different spirits and things like that. Or the demigods. That I have no freedom. I'm just like a speck of dust being knocked around by the planets and demigods. And yet others say that karma or activity is responsible. I'm just getting the results of things that I've done in the past. All this is unbreakable. And the gross materials maintain that my karma, this is my natural tendency is to act in this way, and therefore I'm acting in this way, and nothing can be done about it. These philosophies, there are so many people who believe each of these philosophies. There are also some thinkers, text 20, who believe that no one can ascertain the cause of distress by argument, nor know it by imagination, nor express it by words. Some people will say, these things, the movings and the makings and the dealings in this world, they are too deep, no one can speak about them. So those kind of people who say that no one can speak about them, the first person who shouldn't speak is them. Then be quiet, please. No one can understand the distresses and what's going on in this world and what the cause of anything is. And even if we, and some people even say, yes, I know, and he who knows does not speak. And he who speaks does not know. One cannot speak about these things. They are too deep. So therefore, you ask me a simple question, who has done this? But I'm so bewildered by all these different philosophies. I can't tell if it's I'm doing it to myself, or some power is doing it to me, or I can't even talk about it, or it's just my nature that these things happen, or just the reactions to different things I've done in the past, or it's just my fate, unstoppable fate. So when answering this seemingly simple question, especially with Kali standing there with a stick, he answered so philosophically and so honestly about his own bewilderment. Therefore, Maharaj Prickett immediately understood that this was not an ordinary bull, he was white as a lotus, that he was actually the personification of religiosity. He was religion personified. So, the actual, okay, we'll read, there's something in this purport in text 20 that we'll read right at the end. So then, Maharaj Prickett understood that this was, that he is not ordinary, he is religion. And then in 22, he said, O you who are in the form of a bull, you know the truth of religion, and you are speaking according to the principle that the destination intended for the perpetrator of irreligious acts is also intended for one who identifies the perpetrator. You are none other than the personality of religion. Now, these two verses, 22 and 23, and the purports are very, very important. Because as we go through our lives,
naturally we have to go through our life. So many things happen to us. Some good, some bad, some mediocre. And naturally, when someone gives us good things, we think he is our friend. And if someone gets in the way of our plans or hurts us in some way, we think of them as our enemies. And this mood also enters even within the Krishna consciousness movement. So it is very important that the question of who is doing things to me is very clearly understood, because we are on the receiving end. So many things get done to us. So who is the doer? This is very important that we understand this. So the first thing that Maharaj Prickett said is, because he declined to point out that this person has done it to me, he did not want to get involved on such a simplistic level, that he understood that he was the personification of religion. And he understood that if I identify him as the person who has done this to me, I am also implicated. If I think he is my enemy, he is the person who is hitting me, now he should be punished, and then I am implicated into the further reactions. And this is what happens. We see this again and again, that people, the enemies, the person who becomes the enemy, a few things happen. First thing that happens is that when you strike back at a person who you think is your enemy, then he has to get even with you again. You think that you have to get even with him, and then he gets even with you again, and he gets even with you again, and back and forth and on and on. And these things, these impressions, so deeply enter the consciousness that this can go on for hundreds of births with getting even with each other. And secondly, what happens is when you hate something, your mind meditates on that, and then you become that thing that you hate and that you're afraid of. You become just like that. This is described in the Bhagavatam, that there's a certain type of a wasp that captures insects. I can't remember what kind of a insect. It captures it and it binds it up. It puts it within a hole. And then that insect that gets bound up by the wasp is always afraid, because the wasp can sting him and kill him. So he's always thinking, afraid, when is the wasp going to come? When is the wasp going to come and sting me? And the result of that is, even in that same life, he turns into a wasp due to his meditation with such intensity upon the wasp. So when someone, if we think someone is our enemy, we think about that person so intently that the very qualities that we don't like in the person, we obtain by meditation. So by pointing out this subtle point, Maharaj Prickett realized that this is the personification of religion. And then he said, thus it is concluded that the Lord's energies are inconceivable. How this is working is inconceivable. No one can estimate them by material speculation or by word jugglery. Now we'll read these interesting purports. So who is doing it? When something happens, who has done it? A devotee's conclusion, this is Prabhupada's purport to 22, a devotee's conclusion, because we heard so many philosophical, different ways of philosophically looking at things. What is the way a devotee looks at things? A devotee's conclusion is that no one is directly responsible for being a benefactor or mischief monger without the sanction of the Lord. Therefore, he does not consider anyone to be directly responsible for such action. But in both cases,
he takes it for granted that either benefit or loss is God sent. And thus, it is his grace. In case of benefit, no one will deny that it is God sent. But in case of loss or reverses, one becomes doubtful about how the Lord could be so unkind to his devotees as to put him into great difficulty. Jesus Christ was seemingly put into such great difficulty, being crucified by the ignorant. But he was never angry at the mischief mongers. That is the way of accepting a thing, either favorable or unfavorable. Thus, for a devotee, the identifier is equally a sinner, like the mischief monger. By God's grace, the devotee tolerates all reverses. Maharaj Prickett observed this, and therefore he could understand that the bull was none other than the personality of religion himself. In other words, a devotee has no suffering at all, because so-called suffering is also God's grace for a devotee who sees God in everything. This consciousness alone is enough to bring one back to Goloka Vrindavan, practically speaking. Tatenu kampam susamikshamano bunjane vapma pipava pakam vidvagvivapurvam vidatanam namaste jivatayo muktipade sadhyabak. One inherits, if one has this consciousness, seeing Krishna's hand and Krishna's mercy in both the good and the bad that happens to us, one inherits the kingdom of God naturally. Just like the son, a son, to inherit the property of his father, what does he have to do? According to the laws, especially the old-fashioned laws of inheritance, that all he has to do is be alive. All he has to do is exist when the father passes away. And just by the fact that he exists, he inherits the kingdom of, he inherits his father's property. So if one has this mentality, seeing Krishna's mercy in everything, and appreciating Krishna's mercy in everything, then one just has to exist. He doesn't have to do anything else. If he exists with that mood, he will inherit the kingdom of God. In other words, a devotee has no suffering because so-called suffering is also God's grace for a devotee who sees God in everything. The cow and bull never placed any complaint before Krishna, before the king, for being tortured by the personality of Kali, although everyone lodges such complaints before the state authorities. The extraordinary behavior of the bull made the king conclude that the bull was certainly the personality of religion, for no one else would understand the finer intricacies of the codes of religion. And then in 23, a question may be raised as to why a devotee should refrain from identifying an actor, although he knows definitely that the Lord is the ultimate doer of everything. So now the question is brought to a different level. Because the personality of religion, the bull, he said, I cannot say who has done this, but yet he is a devotee. So why didn't he say, it is Krishna ultimately who is causing this to happen? It is his mercy. There is some mercy in it. Either he has minimized something that I deserved, or he's just simply doing this to remove my pride. He's teaching me something. He's trying to remove something improper from my mind. So it's Krishna's mercy. So why didn't Dharma, the bull, say it is Krishna who has done this? Because Krishna is the ultimate doer, although certainly there are intermediate people who may not have our interest in mind in the same way that Krishna does. So to answer this doubt, or knowing the ultimate doer, One should not pose himself as ignorant of the actual performer. But that's what the bull did. To answer this doubt, the reply is that the Lord is also not directly responsible. For everything is done by his deputed Maya Shakti, or the material energy. So what's going on exists on two different levels. The first level is that Krishna's material energy is working, and the person who is beating us with a stick is really beating us with a stick, and he doesn't have our best interest in mind. So on that level, practically speaking, we have to act practically. Because two things are going on inconceivably. We have to act practically because it's Krishna's Maya Shakti, the material energy that's working. But on the deepest philosophical level, on the deepest level of our devotion, although we may have to act practically, we should know that Krishna is ultimately in control and there's some blessing in it. We have to act practically, but whatever happens, we accept Krishna's hand as something wonderful. The material energy is always provoking doubts. And here's another point of why, when something happens to us, why don't we don't naturally see Krishna in it, generally. We tend to always want to act simply on the practical level, blaming this one and this one and this one and this one and this one, or some, or ourselves. And the reason why we do that and don't go to the higher level of understanding is that the material energy is always provoking doubts about the supreme authority of the Lord. The personality of religion knew perfectly well that nothing can take place without the sanction of the Supreme Lord, and still he was put into doubts by the deluding energy. And thus he refrained. In other words, he was in Maya. This doubtfulness was due to the contamination of both Kali and the material energy. There is the material energy which exists at all times. In all ages. The good times, what to speak of Kali Yuga. In Satya Yuga, the material energy is also there. But what Kali Yuga does is it's like a big magnifying glass that intensifies Kali, the material energy. Intensifies the lower modes of material nature. So the doubtfulness was due to the contamination of both Kali and the material energy. And these points are essential for us to understand if we want to make advancement. The whole atmosphere of the age of Kali is magnified by the deluding energy. And the proportion of measurement is inexplicable. That means that the amount of work that Kali Yuga does to bewilder everyone and to confuse everyone and to divert everyone's consciousness from devotion to Krishna is amazing. How it undermines every sense of authority. How it makes everyone completely bewildered about the purpose of life. How it attaches everyone to the bodily concept of life, thinking that my body is me and the pleasures of the body are all that are important. And the covering becomes so thick on the consciousness that practically people are hopeless, so miserable, mad and getting madder, insane and getting more further insane. The symptom of the mode of ignorance is that what is bad is considered good and what is good is considered bad.
That is one of the prime symptoms. What is up is considered down. Everything is paritani, topsy-turvy, upside down, backwards. This is Kali Yuga. This is Kali Yuga, but with no Maharaj Prickett. Fortunately, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come. But anyway, what will Maharaj Prickett do? Now he's heard from Dharmaraj, the bull. And Prabhupada's purports have very much illuminated what the issues involved are. Now what will Maharaj Prickett do? He said he's going to kill him, he's going to cut off his arms. Now what's going to happen? So we'll hear more tomorrow. Hopefully, if Krishna allows, we'll finish the chapter tomorrow. How to act in Kali Yuga to remove the fog that has so deeply settled upon everyone's consciousness, including our own. Where religiosity, cow killing, irreligiosity, cow killing, exploitation, all the laws are upside down. People have to get involved in issues that either side are irreligious. Kali Yuga. The fog thickens and the covering on the consciousness thickens. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yeah. Three. Okay. But just look, and that's what it does. The first thing it does is undermine the authority of what? Okay. But under what is the first thing that's mentioned here? Of the rulers, right? So when Kali becomes ruler, no one trusts the rulers. Now, isn't that what's happening? Everyone knows that all the rulers are cheaters and thieves and this and that and that. So you have to be a fool to trust the rulers. But when you don't trust the rulers, you just do what you want to do. So the answer, which Prabhupada will explain in later, is there's two ways to go. You either, instead of the God conscious people have to be in charge, people with integrity, people who will point the society towards the law of God instead of away. In marriage, families, everything, you can just see all the different how Kali enters. It's always against authority. The law of from the science point of view, why was Prabhupada so much against? Who is he against more than anyone on the science level? Who?
Darwin.
Yes, Darwin. Why? And even more than that, but which way? Yes, but which way are we going? Looking at this, there's something called social Darwinism. We're progressing. That means that who knows more? If we're progressing, who knows more? You or your parents? Yeah, because you've progressed further than one generation. So therefore, if you listen to your parents, you're a fool. And they teach the children this in school, and then they wonder why the children don't listen to their parents. I mean, the parents don't know a CD-ROM drive or gigabytes from a, you know, they don't know anything about computers or the internet or something. So on every level, every act of Kali So Kali corrupts the authorities. The Sudra addresses the king so that only a fool would listen to them and have respect for them. And therefore there's no order in society. So Kali means you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. If you follow the blind leaders, you're damned. If you don't follow them, you're further damned. That's Kali. You can't win. Only degradation. So the ultimate authority, what Kali is interested in doing, is to bring us further from our relationship with Krishna. Why should I listen to what anyone wants? That's the basic mood. It's progressing so quickly in that direction. Why should I listen to anyone? Why should I serve anyone? So that's ultimately directed towards Krishna. Why should I serve Krishna? It's just what all the conditioned souls want to hear. Why should I serve Krishna? That was the first question. You mean the right king? See, with the right king, see, people aren't just rascals. They're not, people in general are not demons. They're innocent. Most people are innocent. But due to bad education, bad propaganda, and bad principles, the innocent get degraded into demonic thoughts. That's basically what's going on. People are innocent. Is that an innocent person, if he's in the right association, will turn quite nice. Although he may be troubled by previous conditioning, but he'll be proper if he's in the right association. But a demonic person, a horrible person, no matter what association he's in, he'll be horrible. But when someone's innocent, they'll take on the color of their association and their mood. Yeah. Lebei gatim dhatri uchatam tatonyam kambalayalum sharanam brijema. Putana became dhatri, a nurse in the spiritual world, because he approached Krishna in a particular mood. Kamsa gained liberation. But the point being that what you're thinking of, this is actually described in the first chapter of the seventh canto. It's a very important point. How what we meditate upon, and in fact it describes that Sisupal, the intensity of Sisupal and Kamsa's thoughts on Krishna were the greatest because it was an enmity, but it is not recommended in devotional service because the mood is pratikul, it's unfavorable to service to Krishna, so they don't get Krishna's qualities. But by always thinking about Krishna, they ultimately will be benefited.
So it's the service attitude.
Ultimately, yeah. I mean, in devotional service, that's the fact. But the concept of what you become, what you're thinking about, even if you don't have a serving mood, in the material world, that works. Whatever you think about, saratat bhava bharata, you become that. Adishtaya manasthayam dishtaya upasevate. You become that. So, and what we have to understand is those things that we're averse to, by meditating on how much we hate those things, we tend to become those things too. I mean, the one experience that I had really taught me that I probably mentioned this in class a few times, that there was once one devotee who, when I was in Vrindavan, he used to take prasadam. He had a peculiar habit of, when he would eat, he'd put his left hand like this while he was eating. And for some reason or another, he would be taking prasadam and he would keep his left hand like this. For some reason or another, it really bothered me. I don't know why, but just something about it just stuck in my mind that I really hated it. It really bothered me. And when I would see him sitting like that, it would really disturb me. Huh? No. If you were there, I would have asked you to ask him. But in any case, it was only on my behalf. But it was only a few weeks that I was taking prasadam one day, and I looked down at my own hand, and it was in exactly the same condition. Really, it's true. Beware. You become what you hate. This is the very nature of the mind. The mind, what it focuses it on, mind is like clay. What it focuses it on, it takes on those qualities. It takes on that shape. So therefore, we should focus our mind on what? Krishna. On who, rather, excuse me. We should focus our mind on Krishna with devotion. And everything else that we see in the material world, we should see through the light of Krishna. Just like if I say to you, why don't you close your eyes right now? Okay, close your eyes again. I won't do anything. Don't worry. Now, you can think about anything you want right now, except snow. Think about anything you want except for snow. Okay? Anything except snow. Okay, stop. Did you find that snow kept coming into your mind?
Yes.
Right. So this is the danger of being too but we are neutral about the material world, because it's very dangerous to be averse to the material world, because you just end up thinking about it 24 hours a day. So we're neutral to the material world and favorable to Krishna. And we see the material world in relationship to Krishna. That's why. This is because the material energy is so tricky. Whatever you try to use as a lever to get out of the material energy, will use to keep the same thing to keep you in. It's very difficult to overcome the material energy, and therefore, no matter what we do on our own, we cannot get out. Therefore, our only hope is to surrender to Krishna and place ourselves under His care and protection, and see everything is His mercy. Otherwise, we are here for a very long time. Is that the third question? Okay. Any other a quick one?
When you were pointing out that Srila Prabhupada was showing how Dharma was in Maya, I was thinking in 6:22,
I was referring to that purport where Prabhupada was specifically answering the question, why did Dhamara neglect to say this was Krishna? So he was bewildered by the philosophy. But there is one more point that Prabhupada also explains in another purport, that he was forgetful in Maya, but the Maya he was in was Yoga Maya. It was Krishna making him forget. And Prabhupada explains this, and there was a purpose to it. It was specific for a specific reason. And that's explained in the purport, the last part of the purport to 20, which I'll read right now. The conclusion is therefore that the suffering of the representative of religion and the representative of the earth as present before Maharaj Prickett were planned by Krishna to prove that Maharaj Prickett was the ideal executive head
because he knew well how to give protection to the cows, the earth, and the brahmanas, religious principles, the two pillars of spiritual advancement. So Maharaj Cricket was thus put to test for his greatness. So Krishna had arranged it that Dharmaraj would not be able to answer perfectly. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Maharaj Cricket ki jai, Dharmaraj ki jai, Bhumi Devi ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.